Hello, and welcome to Doctor Who 50 Years Ago, the show that looks back to the episode that aired in 1967 and looks at the differences between then and now. This week, episode 2 of The Faceless Ones, where the dilemma about aliens and airlines continues. I am Ben.
I am Luke.
And I'm Nick.
And here we are, and here we go, into the news from 1967. On Monday the 10th of April, arguments began in the Supreme Court case Loving versus Virginia, challenging Virginia's scheme to prevent marriages between persons solely based on racial classifications. And on June the 12th, the court would rule that interracial marriage was legal in all the United States. Here, the equality message is slowly being pushed into de jure law, but there's also the trouble of getting it into de facto law as well, making the white majority of America accept it into their hearts and minds, as well as the laws. This process is ongoing, even today. Or rather, it might have moved on to gender issues.
Yeah. To my mind, this is rather insane that they have to rule on interracial marriage being legal. Surely, what does it matter? But by this point, you'd hope that people are people. Why would you care about the race, legally speaking, you know?
This was an issue they felt needed to go to the Supreme Court for clarification.
Yeah, well,
and it took many months, well, 2 months.
Yeah, but, I mean, that is somewhere where we've at least come a long way on now, is where, legally speaking, there is no protection of racism anymore.
And I'm assuming this was a Democratic PAC Supreme Court as well, so.
Well, at least de jure speaking, de facto is always a bit more difficult, but de jure speaking, racism has been wiped out in the West, thankfully.
On Wednesday the 12th of April, South Korea fired artillery shells across the demilitarized zone into North Korea for the first time since the 1953 armistice, which halted the Korean War. Here, Korea is in the news recently with America on the offensive and North Korea responding in kind. Tensions 50 years ago remaining tensions today. Yippee.
The whole North-South Korea thing has remained practically the same. It's a war in stasis, almost. There hasn't been a peace treaty signed. So it literally is, as I just said, a war in stasis. At any point, conflict could break out again if any actor makes the wrong move, be it North Korea, the United States, South Korea. Wham, we're into a war. And now it could be nuclear.
It's high stakes.
Yeah, I mean, North Korea has got a few nuclear warheads, and they have definitely got the capability to at least drop a warhead on the South Korean capital of Seoul.
And finally, on Saturday the 15th of April, a group of 20 US servicemen marched from New York Central Park to the UN Plaza as part of at least 100,000 protesters against the Vietnam War. Quoted as being the largest peace demonstration in decades and sparking more veterans of the war to join the movement. Here we have soldiers who have served in the military and, by extension, the state, faithfully in the war, knowing full well what went on in the conflict, joining the opposition to Johnson's warring in Vietnam. Everything is rallying against conflict, really.
Yeah, no, that's a big deal that actual veterans are joining in the protests. Although, I mean, at this point, it's only 20 that are leading it, but as time will go on, the war will become increasingly unpopular amongst servicemen and veterans. So this is definitely the beginning of total opposition amongst the American public to the war that will grow over the next 5 or so years.
It's the build-up to the call that the war is not winnable. Let's end it, please.
Yeah, so within 5 years, Nixon will feel forced to sort of try and use Kissinger to sign a peace treaty with the North Vietnamese.
And that's the end of your slightly war-y news. That was the news. And now we shall go into the Faceless Ones episode 2, where it all gets a bit complex. I do hope you guys were able to understand it.
I love this one. It was awesome. This was so good. It was scary and tense and unauthoritarian and wonderfully plotted and paced. I loved it.
I 100% agree with you. That was amazing. I didn't think it would get better in the second episode, but it did. This really was better than the first episode. And you know what? Not having the visuals didn't matter. It was brilliant.
Well, that's very nice to hear. I do agree with you that tensions are brought out very, very well. And again, it's down to the actors performing in it, because there's absolutely no incidental music bar a sting. And
Well, you say that. There is, it's very subtle, but it works really well when they do apply the very small amount of, it's quite quiet in the background, and that's what I like about it, is it's not Dudley over-Dudling it, you know, like it's very appropriate, the level of incidental music that you get in this the serial in general, and this episode in particular.
And just because there's no music doesn't mean there's no sound design, as I shall say.
No, ambience is a key factor here, and it's played extremely well.
I like that it's understated.
We shall get on with the episode. Whilst the charred body of something or someone and Meadows from Air Traffic Control get medical help in Gatwick Airport's medical centre, the Doctor and Jamie have a brief conversation with Michelle from Zurich, who claims she's not Polly, and walks off. The Doctor and Jamie, still in trouble with every authoritarian person ever, do a runner, whilst Blade and a nurse named Pinto do science with armbands, and the faceless burnt one gets Meadows' face and personality. Here come the chameleons, folks.
I thought that was a great cliffhanger resolution where you find out a bit more about the aliens, the villains. He's going to become a doppelganger. That's kind of interesting. It's adding to the conspiracy. It's deepening, which is very interesting. It hooks you into the plot.
Yes, it opens the moral dilemma about identity. And I think it's very key here in a Cold War scenario where spies are rife between East and West. And I think them taking on dual identities or alternative identities would play in the minds of the viewers at home.
Especially amongst the adults. And also another thing I have is Polly saying that, what they ask, I think Jamie asks, why do you sound English? You know, she still sounds the same. And so she claims to have had an English governess teach her English. So I just like that line in terms of how they've built in a believable backstory for her anyway.
As you were saying about Cold War spies, what I found really scary for a 60s audience is the fact that she says she's from Zurich. And Zurich was always neutral. And so there's that added, because it's in Switzerland, and so therefore there's that added sense that everyone's starting to get involved. You can't even trust the Swiss anymore.
Well, very subtly, yes.
Yes.
Maybe it's more like this might be Hulk coming in here and sort of saying, the chameleons are analogous to Soviet spies in that here this Soviet or chameleon is claiming to be from Zurich. I mean, any spy would claim to be from, like a Soviet spy probably would claim to be from Zurich. That gives them a lot of rights in both the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc.
What we're suggesting here now is that the chameleons are in fact communists.
Well, they're analogous to
which is perfect given Malcolm Hawke's background, but there we are. The Doctor and Jamie evade the police in a comedic fashion and continue to look for evidence. The Doctor's cottoned on to the doppelganger issue and learns of Chameleon Tours' holiday packages, believing it to be a ruse for kidnapping and changing personalities of young people. Everything adds up very quickly, and also Ben joins the evading police expedition. We need to talk about Ben and Polly at some point.
So I know you say it in comedic fashion, but I feel like perhaps at the time, as it was a bit more, it was a more innocent time, so the whole newspaper trick may well not have been as cliché as it is now. I don't know.
Still comedic.
Comedic, but was it as cliché in the 60s?
Well, considering it had 50 years less of being done, I suppose, but at the same time,
so it might have been
it's
a
still
bit
been
more
done.
Well, yeah, but it might have been a bit more plausible. I mean, it sort of seems not at all plausible, obviously.
It wasn't.
All right, sure.
What's good about this bit for me is how much it develops the Doctor and Jamie into that double act. They're starting to become comedic friends. And it's just, it's active comedy with an actual obvious joke, not just some witty lines. And it's showing how he's there for good now, and they're learning how to use that character.
Yes, they would have recognised this when they were writing the scripts, that eventually Ben and Polly are to be phased out, and so they know for at least the rest of this story, they have to use the Doctor and Jamie as the single Doctor and the single companion.
Yeah, I would just say the comedy doesn't get in the way of the story. It doesn't feel wrong either, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
It just feels useful.
It's light relief for the tense episode that we are going to experience.
Yeah, it doesn't feel out of place. It's just, it's clearly the two characters have a good rapport with each other.
Mm.
It doesn't get in the way of the story, which
despite
is good.
Despite the situation. Mm. Gotcha.
And what's really good about this is that when they get separated later, there's a greater sense that the two are isolated because you're used to seeing them together and the way they work really well.
We watch the alien become Meadows, having his vocals, reflexes, personality and intelligence, the true chameleon adaptation procedure. The Doctor, Jamie and Ben discover the not Polly person is working for Chameleon Tours. The Doctor questions her and she slips up when she remembers somebody being shot in the previous episode. Blade calls her in for her mistake and she is made to leave, going back to base. Blade starts to build a plan to deal with the Doctor. And this is where it starts to get complicated with all the kidnapping, the spies. Back to base definitely invokes that sort of communist or other infiltration.
What's really good about that beginning bit is how methodical the testing of the alien is. Because nowadays, it would be abstracted out. Instead, they've got to show everything. It's like in Claws of Axos or the Silurians, when the third Doctor explains all his scientific processes and takes an episode to do them properly. Mm. That you need to show things. And I think that makes for a much more dramatic and involved story, even though technically it's boring.
Yes, it shows that the writer is informing as well as entertaining the audience.
It's just, I think the reason why it is entertaining is because they create this atmosphere, that incidental music, that's not quite music, but more just, almost a sound effect, but it really does make that scene quite tense and dark. You really want to know what's going on. It's really fascinating.
It's a great soundscape for a lost episode.
This one still really works, as even without the visuals.
Moving on to Chameleon Polly, she doesn't seem to have any hostile intentions. While she is very sort of passive in the way she speaks to people, it seems like she just wants to be left alone to do her job. There's no sense that she has some sort of plan against them, and it creates that sympathy. Even when she goes to speak to the other conspirators, there's no cackling or ring modulators going on.
It's creating a grey morality.
Mm.
It's almost doing it better than, sorry for bringing this one up again, the Zygon invasion and inversion, which everything's done in an emotional musical sting, whereas it's all conveyed in the performances of the actors here.
Yeah.
Rather than it supplementing the music to bring in a point. Another alien, this time the alien chameleon Meadows, comes into air traffic control and starts working, whilst the Commandant amuses an Inspector Crossland, who was working with the murdered detective inspector, and are both investigating Chameleon Tours, whilst the Doctor, Ben and Jamie continue to hide out from the police and work out what's going on. Ben is sent to investigate the hangar, whilst Jamie keeps an eye on the Chameleon Tours kiosk. And there, he meets Samantha, who is harassing Chameleon Tours herself about her missing brother, amongst many other missing people. This brings in another lead to the mystery, and keeps the audience entertained for the next 4 weeks, which is something these long serials need, staying power. You've got the aliens, you've got the kidnap murder mystery, you've got the planes.
For Doctor Who at this time, you've got a rare, it's quite rare to have this many people with non-RP accents in it, if you know what I mean. You've got yep. Jamie, you've got Ben, you've got Crosland, and you've got Samantha, and they've all got either Scottish, two of them with Scottish accents, then, you know, Ben's got Cockney accent, Samantha's got a Liverpudlian accent, which is quite rare for the time, which is quite interesting. It's really trying to peers being very real life, this whole serial, is what I'm getting from it.
Yeah, if anything, this serial in itself, by casting these characters, is fighting against an authoritarian RP pronunciation thing of the BBC.
Yeah, it just makes it more realistic that not everyone has, ew, they speak in this sort of very posh accent. And so, no, yes. Not everyone speaks like that, you know?
Subconsciously, this serial is revolting against its own metafictional authority because it's refusing to have that RP imposed upon it.
Malcolm Hulk is challenging, which is a good thing.
Yeah, presumably this is a Hulkian sort
concept,
of
yeah.
Innovation, yeah.
I don't think David Ellis did much.
The scene in the little passport kiosk is all shot from the passport camera angle. The doctor says in there, "We're not free with the authorities looking for us." Throughout this episode and the previous episode, it's all been about how the doctor doesn't have a passport. And now it's that passport camera looking on him. It's as though there is no safety. Even in that passport kiosk, someone opens the curtain to look in on them, and they put up this rubbish exterior, and they pretty much only make it for no reason.
It's an effective use of the TARDIS team. For once, both Ben and Jamie feel actually useful in different ways. You know, they both get given different jobs, and it's very plausible why the Doctor would get them to go off in different directions.
Compare this to the last six-part of Power of the Daleks, where everybody just gets a holiday for an episode, although this is about to happen yet again. It's going to be in a pretty more permanent sort of way as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was thinking more of the Underwater Menace, where practically Jamie and Ben are the same character.
The Doctor annoys the Commandant about the body and learns about Inspector Crosland investigating Chameleon Tours before running away again. The not-Polly person fobs off Samantha and then runs off, leaving her and Jamie to form an alliance to find out more information about her missing brother. Ben investigates the Chameleon Tours hangar and finds an unconscious Polly and tries to contact the Doctor, but he's investigating the Chameleon Tours kiosk, discovering postcards and foreign stamps aplenty. He sees Ben is knocked unconscious by Captain Blade and rushes to his aid. And here, action when it happens is shown to be chilling with that single sting played, and it's down to the performance of the actors to sell the suspense and the horror of packaged up bodies and people being frozen by ray guns.
I'm glad you grouped all of this together into one bit, because as you say, this is a very well formed section. What's so good about this bit is throughout the episode, Polly has seemed sympathetic and real and likeable. In fact, she's seemed completely lifelike. You always see this sort of person at the customer service desk. Moreover, there's all sorts of references to grunts, which is also a Hulkian trait. The police say, through Samantha, dozens of people go missing every week, so we don't have the manpower. There's a sense that the people that you're consulting with are people just like you, and that they're sympathetic as well.
But they also represent an authority piece, albeit a very minor authority piece, to be fobbed off by. And so people can go and be renegades and rebel against any form of authority whatsoever, because there's always that slight anarchic streak to people, right?
As it should be.
Oh, goody. So there we are, a delving into the psyche of the great British public, as seen through a Doctor Who television programme 50 years ago.
And the scene all comes to a head when we see Polly's dead eyes when that box is opened. That telesnap is terrifying, because I was starting to get sort of appreciate fake Polly as her own sort of person. And when we see that, how she, it's like she is sucked out her soul like a dementor. It's become so chilling the way she's managed to absorb it. It's like that person's been erased entirely, but moral dilemma-ly, almost, that person is very much a person in their own right. And it's the shell that they've left behind is so scary. I thought that was such a brilliant bit. And then when we see Ben being taken, that's when the brilliant sound design of the episode comes to another head. And in fact, the relationship between Jamie and the Doctor comes to a head as well. The Doctor is in this incredibly quiet area. He's sneaking around mumbling to himself. Whereas Jamie is in this incredibly loud area. He's having all this witty dialogue with Samantha. When the Doctor is screaming at the TV uselessly, there's this greater sense of isolation and fear that he can do nothing. He's been left on his own so far away geographically.
His group is being divided, and it provides a great contrast.
Yeah.
Sound design-wise. Inspector Crossland investigates the disappearance of Inspector Gascoigne and discovers about the Doctor and Jamie. Jamie and Samantha see that Polly has disappeared, never to be seen again, and gets a pre-written postcard from comedian Tors, which is seen to hide the disappearance of the youths before being caught by Crossland. Rather, Jamie is caught by Crossland. The Doctor gets to the chameleon Tors hangar and is lured by Spencer's pen-like weapon, the body of Meadows in a packing case, another horror moment, and a cry for help. But he's put in a room and is frozen by some gas.
I mean, this is a more of a traditional cliffhanger, but still, at this point, you now sort of buy into the fact that these people are quite menacing and definitely have the power to do something like this to the Doctor.
It's,
so
it's the reassertion of their villain status.
Yeah, I mean, you're not, you still don't really know exactly what they want. I mean, I guess at this point, it's a sort of probably the body snatchers sort of thing is what I'm feeling from them. But yeah, you can buy into the fact they can do this, that they can lure the Doctor somewhere and then in an attempt to kill him.
Yes.
We've seen that they have enough power to cover up deaths, etc., etc.
This was a brilliant cliffhanger because we see how manipulative these people are. We see how isolated the Doctor is, and it creates this real sense of dread, even though we know the Doctor isn't going to die. You see how horribly he is at the mercy of these people, that it makes it work on a whole other level.
It's stacking up the odds against him and presenting these characters as formidable villains, but also with the slight Hulkian twist that they have reasons to their villainy, which the people could actually sympathise with.
They definitely feel a bit more layered. I definitely feel like the serial, as it goes along, will explain further what their agenda is. So,
it's the
which is
of,
nice.
Yeah.
It's nice to have it other than they are generic man rubber suit monster.
It is the sort of grey morality I feel that the Cold War is becoming synonymous with, that both sides had a inhibited fear of one another wiping each other out. And so in this story, the chameleons want bodies for some reason or another, whereas the other people are fearing this alien incursion.
I think if we were to compare this to the Macro Terror was always incredibly over the top and bizarre, but that's pretty much why I liked it. Here, it's much more grim, and you don't really know who to root for, and there's a greater sense of unease rather than terror.
It's closer to home, quite literally, in my case. And yet it also has the tiniest injects of humour and light relief, the newspaper scene, the photo booth scene. And so it's this wonderful mix and blend, which just appeals to me somewhat.
But importantly, compared to New Who...
Yes?
The comedy is kept the first half, and when the bad stuff is happening, The jokes stop as well. There's a very consistent tone. The Doctor doesn't say, like, cool party when he's being frozen or something ridiculous. And it keeps that sense of dread that you who always loses.
And so we can see the difficulty of toning of Doctor Who episodes between 50 years ago and now. Thank you very much for watching. You can find us on Blogspot, which redirects to iTunes. Leave positive comments there, it helps. You can also find us on Facebook and YouTube, where you can like, comment and subscribe, and Google Plus, if you dare. We shall be back next week to investigate the third episode of The Faceless Ones. Until then, I've been Ben.
Two has been Luke.
Three has been Nick.
And this isn't a funny joke. Thank you, and goodbye.
But we're gonna hammer it into the ground!